If you read the obituaries in the paper, you get used to seeing descriptions of people's lives and activities that make them sound like the kinds of people you wish you'd known, if you don't already. Today's guest writes the obituaries for her local paper, and rather than finding it depressing, she finds it uplifting. The approach to the writing is also the name of Heather Lendy's book, Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small-Town Obituary Writer. Heather Lendy is a resident of Tiny Haines, Alaska, where she writes the obituaries for the Chilcot Valley News. But she's also contributed essays to NPR and the Christian Science Monitor, among others. She writes a regular column for the Anchorage Daily News and has written two previous books, If You Lived Here, I'd Know Your Name, and Take Good Care of the Garden and the Dogs. Heather Lendy, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So even before we get to finding the good in other lives, you've had to find it in your own. What happened to you after the publication of that first book?
I got run over by a truck.
Yikes.
Which sounds funny now, but I actually, I was riding my bicycle on a quiet street here in Haines, and a guy stopped at a stop sign and looked both ways and didn't see me and pulled out, and I was run over and crushed my pelvis and had a bunch of other injuries, and so it was kind of a big thing to happen to somebody. I thought writing a book would change my life, and it certainly did.
How long a recovery was that?
Well, there was I had to be medevaced to Harborview Trauma Center in Seattle, and then spend about a month in a nursing home in Seattle before I could come home. And then I couldn't walk for several months, and it was a wheelchair and then a walker. And I would say overall, it was probably a year before I was moving around comfortably, sort of, and it's been a couple of years. I mean, it's been 10 years now, and I'm starting to feel really good.
Okay.
So it's just time and moving and luck, I think.
Mm-hmm. Did that help your outlook on life in the sense that if you could recover from something like that, then you know things are generally looking pretty good?
More so though, I think it not so much that if I could recover from it, but it made me realize that you just don't know what's going to happen any minute, and that anything could happen, and that most people, I think, by the time they hit, if they're lucky, it doesn't happen until they're 45, are hit by a truck, whether it's proverbial or real, as in my case. And I know it changed my whole worldview in lots of ways, made me more compassionate and empathetic, I think. You know, when you're the person that's in a wheelchair in an airport and people are averting their eyes, it changes you, and it changes the way then you treat people who might be in that situation.
Hmm. What got you, Heather, into the business of writing obituaries in the first place?
It was kind of an accident, really. I was writing the Duly Noted column, which is, we have names in boldface, and there's weddings and babies being born, or, the Lendy family went on vacation in Pennsylvania and, went to the Gettysburg battlefield and saw former Haines residents, Joe and Arlene Smith.
Huh, so you still have those kinds of things in the Chilcot Valley News?
Yeah, yes. It's a very popular column. So I was writing that. And the paper got a new reporter that rubbed some people the wrong way, as sometimes happens. And there was an elderly lady who was ill and knew she didn't have much longer to live, and she asked that he not write her obituary. And so then the editor of the paper and the publisher at the time, Bonnie Hedrick, said that I should just go ahead and write it. Since I can write about live people, I could probably write about dead people. And that was my first one. And actually, the woman who was the subject of the obituary had left a letter that had all the things that I needed to know to put in there. You know, her mother's middle name, where she graduated from high school, all the kind of details that you build an obituary around. And so, in a way, she also taught me how to write them.
That's interesting, though, that reporter rubbed people so much the wrong way that a woman who was... It's interesting. So somebody didn't want their obituary written by this person.
Yeah. And that happens. I mean, and it may have been just fine, but you know how that is. There's in small places, sometimes somebody gets mad at somebody and just decides they're not going to do that anymore.
Hmm. Well, speaking of small places, what kinds of trade-offs are there to living in a place like Haines, Alaska? It sounds like it is both very beautiful and very remote.
You know, I just I don't see a lot of that it's a trade-off. I think I'm lucky to live here. You know, it's quiet, it's safe, it's beautiful. You know, I suppose, like my sister, who's from Manhattan, I mean, she just thinks it's kind of the end of the earth here. But she likes to go out to dinner, for instance, and in the wintertime in Haines, you can't really do that. There's nothing open. And she likes some of the finer things, I suppose, in terms of people getting dressed up or places that are maybe put a little bit more together than some of our public buildings or private buildings even. But
she's looking for somewhat more cosmopolitan amenities than
Haines. Yeah, but you know, we have a tremendous art scene here. I mean, there was a band we had just last week. There was a really fun kind of Celtic band called Scythian, and I mean, I think they're really well known, and they were just playing in our backyard, you know, after the concert here. And so we get people like that come through. We have a ton of very creative people. We have a really strong culture. The town is about a quarter Tlingit, and like my son-in-law just left yesterday to paddle a traditional dugout canoe all the way down Lynn Canal, a fjord that we live on, to Juneau to celebrate the opening of a native cultural center there. And the canoe was carved by Wayne Price and a group of young men. And Wayne's a world-renowned artist. And that's how he's spending his week this week, paddling with my son-in-law and some of his friends down to Juneau. So I feel really lucky to live here, I think.
Well, you certainly make it sound like a really interesting place. We'll come back and talk about the people who've left that place and how you write about them and what that's gotten you to do about looking for the good in life. The book is Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary. Writer Heather Lindy is the author and our guest. We'll come back and talk more with Heather. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so. We'll come back and talk with Heather and you in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Heather Lindy, who lives in Haines, Alaska, and writes obituaries for the Chilcot Valley News. She's also an essayist for NPR and the Christian Science Monitor and a bunch of other publications. Her latest book of three is called Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So when we talk about obituaries, I mean, these are not the ones written by the family. Is it just for the notable people in town, or does everybody get the Heather Lindy treatment?
No, everybody does. And it's not even so much the Heather Lindy treatment. It's the Chilcot Valley News, the editor now, Tom Morford, and before that, Bonnie Hedrick, before that, Ray Maniker, have always thought that when someone dies in Haines, it's news. And they've always treated the obituaries as kind of half obituary and half profile or feature. And so, you know, there's always a photograph, and there's always the usual stuff that's in obituaries, you know, how they died and where and when and how old they were and, you know, at the bottom the survived bys. But in the middle, there's not just the biographical information, but kind of quotes, interviews from two or three or more sources, depending on the person's kind of influence in town. So I write obituaries for a waitress at, you know, the local Bamboo Room restaurant or for former mayors. You know, it's everybody gets pretty much the same treatment. And the length really isn't always determined by anything other than how interesting they were or how many, you know, people they left behind that enjoyed their company.
So it's not like a formula of like, you know, give me 8 inches on the person who just died. Did you kind of?
No, it is though. The Chilcot Valley News is a small newspaper, so it's 8 pages or 12 pages or 16 pages depending on the ads and the news that week. So sometimes my editor will say, you know, write short. We've got a full paper. Or sometimes he'll say, write long. I don't have enough ads this week. Or sometimes he'll just say, you know, let's hold this one over till next week because we can't give it enough room this week. So they range anywhere from I think they probably average 600 words, which is pretty long compared to what most people are used to reading in the paper. And sometimes they go longer and sometimes a little bit shorter. Maybe 500 words is probably the shortest.
And so what's the process? So how do you go obtain the information about the people? You mentioned that you got lucky with the first case where the woman had left a letter behind.
Well, you know, we sort of know most people in town, so we'll hear something like, you know, did you hear that so-and-so passed away? And I'll usually know that pretty quickly, within a day. And then, depending if it was a tragic, sudden death, I'll wait a little bit and check in with some close friends or neighbors about maybe when they would be, or a pastor, about when the family might want to talk about the obituary. If it's an elder who has been in hospice care and dying for a long time, sometimes the family calls me, like, as soon as they die and say, do you want to come on over? We've got everybody here, and we can start working on the obituary. Often, it also depends on the day they die, because the paper's published on Thursdays. And so if somebody dies on a Wednesday, I have more time to do it. Because we wouldn't try to write it right that day to get it in the paper.
Heather, how do you keep from getting caught up in the emotions? I mean, you have to talk to a fair number of grieving people, it sounds like.
It's the hardest part. I mean, that's the really hard part. I just have to sometimes just kind of... there's two things, I suppose. I sort of get ready before I go in the house, and I think to myself, it's good I'm here. And then I also know that I'm helping them with something that is sort of on the list to do when someone dies. And most families have a lot of things. They're trying to figure out the you know, getting extended family members into town and where will they stay and who's going to feed everybody. And then there's, you know, the funeral arrangements or the burial arrangements or even picking the music or whatever. There's a lot of stuff happening. And then all the financial things they're trying to figure out when somebody dies. And so if I can help them get that obituary out of the way, it usually helps with a lot of other things. Also, often when we do the obituary, people want that because then they can use the information in it for a eulogy. And sometimes I even write the eulogies for people. I change around the story and use some things that might not make a newspaper obituary, but things that the family wanted to say, and I'll give them a copy. I'll just rewrite it for them so that somebody in the family can read it in their voice.
Wow, that's a great public service you provide.
Well, I mean, in a small town, everybody does something, and I'm not a great casserole baker. I'm not a musician, so I can't play the piano. I'm lousy on the computer, so I'm trying to do a program that looks nice, but I can do the obituary. And I, for whatever reason, I'm able to do it, and I'm usually able to make the family feel a little better or the friends a little better in the process.
Heather Lindy's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is called Find the Good. Have you run up against the wall, Heather? I mean, somebody who either left behind relieved people who were glad the SOB was gone or something like that?
Yes, I have. And those are usually shorter. And it's interesting because I think it's the opposite of what most people might think. But in those obituaries, I tend to just list their accomplishments on paper, you know, their military service, say, or where they went to school, or the jobs they held, some of those things, and not a whole lot of, obviously, quotes from friends or family saying how wonderful they were. I do try, though, and that, I mean, I suppose that's where the title of the book comes from, or I know it is, to find some good in each life. And I think it exists. I mean, I believe that. And so I, you know, they might have been a great gardener. You know, they might have really had beautiful flowers or grown prize-winning vegetables, or maybe they could fillet a fish like nobody's business. And so I'll try to find something, some redeeming feature, and most people have them.
There are other examples in the book of other people finding the good, and I love the example of what advice Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers' mom, gave him. What was all that?
Well, you know, I think I kind of sometimes, I do tend to walk on the sunny side of the street. I'm a bit of a Pollyanna, and yet I write obituaries, and I know that, I mean, every single person I write about dies, and so I was trying to explain that to somebody, and I was thinking about it. It's the same way as what Mr. Rogers, you know, the old TV guy, said. His mother told him that whenever there was something bad happening, look for the helpers. You know, and we see it over and over and over again. I mean, the Boston Marathon, lives were saved because people ran toward those explosions. And it doesn't mean that that there wasn't just something horrific and awful happening there, but you have a choice which way to look, and look for the helpers. And I think that that's something that we can teach ourselves to do. Everybody can see what's going bad very quickly. But over and over again, I've seen it in a very small world, writing obituaries in a very small place, that when bad things happen, it brings out good people.
And so we can all see the, oh, my God, that's awful moment. But then there's a moment after that when people need help and can get it.
Right. I mean, I was hit by a truck, and then literally I was lying in the road, and 2 minutes later there was, like, Fireman Al and Travis, who was a volunteer EMT, and they were, like, talking to me, and I felt better right away. And they saved my life because I wasn't afraid anymore. And so instead of focusing on the guy that ran me over, who, of course, he felt terrible too, but, I mean, I could be yelling at him for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just so appreciative of the people that helped me.
I've avoided asking this because I'm trying not to make light of it, but given how small Haines is, and it sounds like everybody knows everybody, did you know the truck driver?
Yeah. Absolutely. He's the manager of a local grocery store, and I see him all the time.
Huh.
And his little son plays with my granddaughter.
Huh. We're talking to Heather Lindy on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the author of Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. You can join our discussion about finding the good in life here on the Exchange. 800-838-3760 is our phone number, anywhere you can hear us. 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Exchange.
Thank you. I have been called a Pollyanna, too, and I just really appreciate your approach to what you're doing, which is, you know, reporting on somebody's obit is a pretty big deal. So my question, though, is, you know, I worked with some people who were not positive, and even mom, who's now 90, almost 96, can sometimes have her days when she's pretty dour about stuff. What do I tell people that don't see the, you know, they don't see the bright in it? I mean, I was raised, among other things, to, you know, count my blessings. So anyway, that's kind of my question. Okay?
All right. Thanks, John.
You know, I guess what I would say is I wouldn't tell anybody to look on the bright side. I would just try to be brighter around them. You know, I had one friend that every time I saw her, I used to laugh and call her like Eeyore, because I knew the minute I said, hey, how you doing today, I would get a litany of all the terrible things that were happening. And there's a tendency, I think, for me anyway, to then start complaining back, you know. Oh, you're right. The weather is terrible. The potholes on Main Street are driving me crazy. There's no vegetables in the grocery store. You know, you could go on and on. And instead, I would always try to, it got to be a little game. Whenever I'd see her, I would just bring her back, just start saying good things. And not arguing with her bad point of view, but just thinking to myself, how can I turn this around, you know? But without, I would never tell anybody to be positive, but I think if you can make them laugh or even at their own grumpiness, sometimes that helps.
It seems like either condition is contagious, though. I mean, either the Eeyore condition or the sunny disposition.
Right. You know, I used to coach, I spent 17 years coaching the high school cross-country running team. And I always used to tell the kids when we were traveling, and from here we had long trips on ferries or even airplanes, or you'd be with the kids for days, and that couldn't be very challenging. And I would just tell them to be happy babies. You know how when you're next to a baby that's screaming, nobody wants to get near it, but a little baby that's smiling and cooing, I mean, you can't get enough of it. And as adults, I mean, little kids don't really have that choice. But we do. And so whenever we're going where I said, just be a happy baby. And if you're not a happy baby, pretend you are. Because I don't want to be around a bunch of whiny kids.
Speaking of running, you have run some marathons yourself, is that right?
Yes.
And have you had a chance to get back to that since the accident 10 years ago?
No, that's something that isn't going to happen anymore.
Okay.
I'm not going to be able to run anymore, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can do a lot of things. I can hike. I ride my bike again. I rode my bike this morning. You know, it sounds like a cliche, but there's seasons for different things in your life, and I'm happy enough to be here that if I can't run another marathon, it's not the end of the world.
Hmm. What are heart rocks? These figure in the book, Find the Good.
Oh, well, I live on a beach that's kind of an old glacial valley here, and the beach is littered with gray kind of gravel, soft little gravel and sand, and for some reason, a lot of the rocks end up being worn in the shape of hearts, and they're usually, you know, they're smaller than the palm of your hand. They're little, and they're soft and round, and they wear in the shape of hearts, and it's pretty common here in Haines for people to collect them, and everybody kind of knows what they are, and a lot of my friends have heart rocks, or I have heart rocks, and I think of them sometimes as a symbol or a metaphor, if you're going to get that way. But it's so interesting to me that I can walk on that beach every day for a couple miles with my dog, and some mornings all I see are heart rocks, and other mornings if I'm looking I can't find one. And I think there's a message there, you know, that they're there all the time, but for some reason, if whatever is in our head isn't receptive to it, it's like love or kindness or any of those things. You have to, it's enough sometimes to know they're there, and that when you need it, maybe suddenly they'll be in your hand.
Open to the possibility that the heart rocks are nearby anyway.
Yeah, and I think, too, I also, you know, everybody always talks about hearts turning to stone, but I think if you live in a place where you've seen stone turn into hearts, it's hard not to tell everybody about that, and that's a good thing.
Heather Lendy, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Find the Good. There's a lot of things that you've had to work through in your life. Tell us about adopting your fifth child and rethinking the concept of perfect.
My youngest child is, she came from Bulgaria when she was 8 years old, and she'd been in an orphanage there, and it was really interesting to me as kind of a mom. I had four other children, and my youngest was also 8 at the time. So we added a fifth child into a busy household, for starters. But, you know, you spend all this time with your little children doing all these right things and making sure that, you know, they had a quote-unquote perfect raising. And then you bring a child in who's had, like, about the worst raising possible and realize that she's fine almost intrinsically or pretty good, and that in some ways, in lots of ways, that maybe pretty good is better than perfect. So that was part of that, and then just raising a family, you know, you learn that now, especially I guess I like a lot of women, I think, who are, I'm 55, who are over 50, you kind of want to do something different with after the sort of child rearing years and after the career years, and say, what am I going to do now? But I like being where I am, and so I've just sort of changed. My house isn't as neat and tidy, or my garden isn't, because I want to change kind of in place and maybe go on and do different things with my day, but at the same time still be here. I don't want to sell my house and buy a boat and go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of changing in place, and I have adult children now with 5 grandchildren, and I want them to hang out at my house. And so it's just, sometimes there's just chaos here between children and dogs and, you know, rearranging the furniture so that they don't touch the wood stove or trip or go up the stairs. I've got gates on stairs and all these things now, high chairs, that I didn't have that much of chaos when my own children were little. But now with my grandchildren here, I do, and I like it. I want them to come home and not be worried that I'm going to be running around picking up after them or squirting the Windex on all the little panes that they're sticking their hands on.
Oh, right. So better messy and laughing than neat and not, it sounds like.
Well, for me, and again, that's just me. I'm reluctant to tell anybody else how to do it, but I've learned for myself that's kind of helping me make the transition to maybe not being you know, an old grumpy person.
Well, speaking of, I love the detail of writing the obituary of Norm Blank, who was slow to repair holes in his fishnet. What was that about?
Well, Norm was a fisherman and a family man and a much-loved guy in Haines. And when I was writing his obituary, his wife joked that he wasn't always quick to mend his net because he wanted to make sure a few extra fish made it up the river each year. And Norm also was very devoted to his family. And I learned in writing his obituary that I hadn't known, because I'd always known him as a fisherman and a seasonal carpenter, that he had worked for the state of Alaska, and he had had a job. He was actually a trooper at one point, a wildlife protection officer, and he had been offered a promotion, but it would mean traveling around the state more, and he quit a perfectly good state job, which here in Haines is, you know, important. There's not a lot of work, and to stay home and spend more time with his family. And then I also learned, you know, that he always put his family or friends first. And part of that was because he had a genetic marker for pulmonary fibrosis. So the men in his family had all died young. Norm made it to just about 80, 79, I think.
Wow.
And he was well almost until the last 6 months. And I think maybe having that shadow over him is what made him more positive. And the other thing about Norm was that he was very involved in protecting the Chilkat River and in the formation of the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve.
Okay, I have to take a break here. Heather Lendy's our guest. Her book is Find the Good. We'll come back and talk more with her and you in a minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Heather Lendy. She lives in tiny Haines, Alaska. She writes obituaries for the Chilkat Valley News. She's also a contributor to NPR, the Christian Science Monitor, and a lot of other publications. She's a prolific writer. Her third book is called Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760, and our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I want to finish up with Norm Blank. He sounds like quite the guy.
I'm sorry. I get all excited when I talk about him. And that was also one of the pieces in the book that made me the most nervous, because his family are very private. His wife, Patricia, is extremely private, and I knew that if I'd asked her permission to write about Norm, she would have said no, and so I did it anyway, and then I brought her a copy of the book before it came out and hoped that she would think it was okay, and I received her blessing, and then I got to read that piece at the Haines Library at a big gathering where the family was all there.
Huh.
But Norm, the other thing about him was he was, and this is probably in where you are too, but Norm was a... he really was, in many ways, an environmental activist, although he would never, ever have said that, because sometimes in small rural places, being an environmentalist isn't popular.
Right.
And so I wanted to mention that, because he had time and again done things that made a difference in the environment here, and his family just insisted no. And then one of his friends was there when we were writing the obituary, and he said... He also kind of thought we really needed to at least make a nod to that part of Norm, who was very attached to the natural world and a spokesman for it in many ways. And he said, Norm always spoke for the fish. So why don't we just say that he spoke for the fish. And I thought, you know, what a great, that's perfect. And that's how he did it. He didn't speak against anything. He spoke for salmon. And in doing so... created helped preserve some very beautiful places here and also ensure his livelihood.
Heather, as small as Haines is, and you do tend to know most of the people there. I mean, the other book was If You Lived Here, I'd Know Your Name. Are you often surprised, though, by the details that pop up when you're researching the obituaries?
Yeah, I love to find things that are surprising. I absolutely loved it that Maxine Rudd, who was an older gal who was always covered with dog hair, who was ran the ugly dog contest at the, you know, 4th of July picnic, and was active in starting an animal rescue kennel here. When I wrote her obituary, I learned that she had grown up as the daughter of a pilot and private pilot in California, and learned how to fly at a very young age, and that enlisted in the service in World War II and was told that she couldn't fly and was a Marine flight instructor during the Second World War.
Wow, good for her.
And I never would have guessed that in a million years.
Huh. It was just one of those things that she'd done long ago and just wasn't there.
And I think that's true. You know, people come from other places here, and so sometimes their early life, you knew them as one thing here for 30 years, but something else, they may have had a whole nother story from wherever they came from.
I understand from what you say in Find the Good that there's a bit of a difference between the writer voice that you deliver and the person you are when speaking. How are they different?
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, it sounds like you might be a little less formal when you're speaking.
Oh, than when I'm writing?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, completely. I mean, I think that's why you write, to get it right. I'm not a very formal person at all, and I'm not a particularly. I think the best when I'm writing, and I think that my best self comes out when I'm writing, and I often think. It's kind of weird what I do in that, and I've heard this description of it before as an intimate letter to strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some of the things that when I write things down that my family is surprised that I thought about. And I just think it's totally obvious. I think how could anybody not know that's how I was feeling or what I was observing in this particular situation.
Hmm. That's interesting. So you must give them all copies of the book. Here, read this.
Well,
to know me a little
yeah.
better. It sounds like you have a bit of a routine for dealing with your own grief. I mean, obviously you're dealing with death a fair amount, but you know, you're going to feel your own grief at times too, and you've got an interesting process for making sure it gets out.
Yeah, no, I never cry in front of the family or the people that I'm writing an obituary about, because my job is to kind of take a deep breath and help them and, you know, get it done. It doesn't help if I'm a mess when I'm trying to do it. But there are times when I leave a home, especially when a child, a young person has died and the parents are there. I mean, and having kids, I'm just wrecked, And I'll howl sometimes in my car, cry and think I can't do this again. And when I have a friend, when I've been to a friend's funeral, I just can't even stand it. And I'll cry a lot, and I'll walk up and down the beach, and I'll yell at the world, and then it's like, okay, now you got to start again, make a new friend, or invite somebody over for coffee, kind of get yourself wrung out and start over, because that's what people do, that's it. We can't just keep cutting ourselves off every time we lose somebody, because it's just the way it is. That's the way life rolls. People are born, and they die, and there's nothing we can do about it.
That is a great expression, though. You get yourself wrung out. Just wring the grief.
Yeah, no, I get very upset. I don't do it publicly, but I do kind of give myself a good shout out, and that's why it's nice to live in a place that is there's a lot of empty space, and you can take a hike or go out in the middle of nowhere and just give yourself a good talking to.
You can be alone for sure.
Yes.
Not all life turmoil is caused by death, obviously. And there's a particular vignette in this book about your reaction when your youngest, your adopted youngest, got pregnant. What happened there?
Oh, as a parent, and especially I think being in a small town, I wanted to make sure my children all went to college, and that was my big goal. And I had four of them were just about done, and the fifth one was. Going into her sophomore year at school and doing fine. And when she and her boyfriend got pregnant, and I was, my family didn't tell me. I was out of town and everybody else knew. The siblings all knew and my husband knew before I did, which gives you an idea about how they knew what my expectations were. And, I joked around. They were like, nobody wanted to see the top of my head blow off.
Right.
And that whole experience taught me a lot, because I had drawn these lines in the sand, essentially, of this is sort of my Waterloo. This is what my kids have to do. And this is my job as a parent and their job as children. And I realized through that pregnancy and childbirth that I had to move that line. And her boyfriend was a nice guy. She's a good girl. She wanted to have the baby. So, and my husband is a very sensible and straightforward. straightforward guy, and he was just, you know, like, Heather, it's a baby. It's not a terminal illness. And now, actually, we just had Mother's Day yesterday, and my daughter lives next door, and she since has married the father of her first child and little Lonnie, and now they have Sylvia Rose as one. And I mean, I can't even imagine not having those children running back and forth or the swing set in my yard. And I'm so lucky, I think, that I didn't turn that into a big disaster, because I would have been the one that lost the most, I think. And I now I see some other parents that do that, and I just think, be careful. Be careful. That's all this is a cautionary tale. I'm just so grateful that I almost lost something very important by my response, and I didn't. And not through my own, but thankfully the rest of my family helped me behave better.
Well, there's a great sentence in there. I realized if Stoli weren't my child, I would know exactly how to support her.
Right, and I learned that writing an obituary from an old Texas gal who she told me that the secret to her long marriage to her husband was that whenever they were angry with each other, they spoke to each other as politely as if, you know, they were strangers or there was someone else listening. And it's true. I mean, we can say the most hurtful things to people we're closest to. And she said, just be careful to not do that. And I remember thinking that right away when Stoli, I was like, oh, thank God Nowita had told me that, because this is the time when if I say the wrong thing once out loud, I could live to regret it for the rest of my life.
Heather Lendy's our guest on The Exchange. Her book is Find the Good. There's a chapter here that starts with Richard Boyce, and it reminds us that there are occupations, particularly in Alaska, as wild as it can be, that lead to tragedy. What happened to Richard?
He fell off the deck of a gillnetter, a boat, a salmon gillnetter that he had built, named after his oldest daughter, the Eleanor S., on the 4th of July. And his younger daughter, his youngest daughter, was his deckhand. And she could see him. She could throw him a life ring, and the current caught him, and he was in heavy rubber rain gear, and he disappeared. And they never found him. And that story is one of where the rest of the fleet escorted the daughter and the boat home. Another fisherman hopped on board and helped her get back for 6 hours motoring up to Haines. And then the response by another fisherman's wife was to come up with a better personal flotation device than a life jacket. A lot of the fishermen won't wear the jackets because the buckles catch on things, or they think it's bad luck, or all kinds of reasons. And she came up with... she found these suspenders that go on your rubber rain pants that are inflatable. You pull a little tag, and they'll help you float. And it's not like that necessarily would have saved Richard. You know, you never know. But it was a really good response, and they ended up raising almost $30,000, which in Haines is a huge amount of money.
Wow.
And provided suspenders for every single member of the fishing fleet, about 173 pairs for both the captains and their deckhands.
And are most of them wearing them these days?
Some of them are, yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are. And they're all embroidered with In Memory of Richard Boyce, which is also, even if they just see them hanging in the wheelhouse, my guess is that might keep them safer. They'll know that they are loved and to be careful.
Mm-hmm. What's the most surprising thing, Heather, that you've learned about somebody in obituary research, something you just didn't know until you got to the point of talking to family and friends?
I mean, I think the most recent surprising thing, there's always something, is Art Jess was a very wise, people would call him a sage, great speaker, a good listener, the kind of person that you would turn to say something in a crowd of people. And he would often quote poetry or scripture or history very well. You know, he's like a learned man, mm-hmm. in the very old-fashioned sense. And when he died, I learned he couldn't read or write.
Really?
And it was like, how can that be? And apparently he was extremely dyslexic as a child, and he learned just to be a listener. And when people read to him, he would remember. He'd have them read it again and again. And his wife would read to him at night. And he didn't say anything about it because it was kind of an embarrassment to him. But he was on the Friends of the Library board, and he couldn't read or write.
Wow.
And he made a living as a heavy equipment operator and a mechanic, because he was very good at that. And he actually helped develop some sort of systems and stuff for the Caterpillar company, and was down in where their headquarters are in Arizona for a couple of years working on some device for them. Like I say, a very, very intelligent man, and very learned, but holy cow, I never in a million years would have known that he couldn't read or write.
That would have been, something you would not have expected there. Are you happier, Heather, doing this than writing stories for the front page, you think?
Yeah, very much so. I think after someone dies, you get permission to ask a lot of questions and be kind of a little bit nosy about their life, that when people are alive, they're just more protected or they're more filtered. And the families, I always find that after somebody dies, they'll tell you that. Nobody would have mentioned that, I don't think, about Art Jess until after he died. And then it became a matter of, they were proud of it. And it was just a very something they wanted the world to know. But beforehand, they might have not said it because they thought it might be hurtful to him. And I've just found that writing about trying to sort out things in the news is a little more challenging because there's lots of people trying to influence it in different ways. And once somebody dies, it's a little different. They kind of want to just say how it was, mostly.
Mm-hmm. And bring it to a decent conclusion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you think you'll keep on doing this for quite a while longer?
Yes. I do. I as long as the newspaper, I'm very fortunate that we have a newspaper in Haines, a weekly paper where Tom Morford still wants to do that and where he hasn't started charging the family to write their own, which is the way the world has gone for most regular people.
Yeah, for a lot of obituaries, for sure.
And I'm happy to do it as long as he's able to sustain it.
It's quite an inspiring book, Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. Heather Lendy wrote it and joined us today. Heather, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
All right, take care.